Hello and welcome to Databook. I am Jack Murtha and I hope you had a fantastic Thanksgiving.
I'm Tom Castles. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We just had a conversation here in the studio about if you had to give one up, which would it be, cranberry sauce or stuffing? Very heated debate. Let us know on Twitter what you think.
Right away, please. But first, we have a really great show for you today. We are going to be talking about the rise of voice assistants in the clinic. So we're talking about things like Amazon Alexa, Siri, and some that are especially made for healthcare. To discuss this, we are bringing on John Nasta, who is a member of our editorial advisory board. He's a writer for Forbes. He's working with Google Health. He is generally just one of the top KOLs in health tech.
And just to remind everybody, if this is your first time listening, this is a healthcare analytics news podcast. You can find us online at hcanews.com. And as Jack mentioned, we're out there on social media. Come find us.
So let's turn to today's story. And it's pretty fitting that we tell this story today because
it's Black Friday. And that means many, many people are putting voice assistants in their digital or physical shopping carts. We're talking Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant. By now, you've got to know these smart speakers that I'm talking about.
Voice assistants are in, and that is putting it lightly.
Check out these numbers to understand what we mean. As of this past January, 39 million Americans owned one of these devices.
That's one out of every six adults.
And hey, in the next 3 years, voice assistants are expected to enter more than half of U.S. homes.
Believe it or not, now voice assistants are actually beating out smartphones in terms of adoption rates.
And the message there is pretty clear. After early consumer hesitance, your Alexas and Google assistants and whatever else are becoming just a normal part of our lives. We're embracing these voice assistants and we're starting to actually fall in love with these things.
And naturally, the rise of this technology raises another question. What can voice assistants do for healthcare? We're already seeing startups developing this smart tech for the clinic. Suki is probably the most notable, and it's got a high-powered team with folks from Google, Apple, 23andMe, a whole lot of brain power there.
So if you've been paying attention, you'll see that voice assistants are already entering the clinic. But right now, the numbers are kind of small, and that means that we won't really understand the precise effects for quite some time.
But we can still examine the promise of this tech for patient outcomes, costs, and even physician well-being.
And we can explore the alarming problems that seem to be baked into the very fiber.
So, on today's episode of Databook, we've got some good news and some bad news. Tom, what should we give them first?
Well, I've got a full belly and I just don't think I can handle the bad news right now. Let's go with the good stuff.
The good news it is. So, first, we will explore a very promising use case of a voice assistant for healthcare. We will take you to the bleeding edge of health tech and hopefully give you a look at the best possible tomorrow.
And then, we just can't avoid this. We're going to look at a very bad problem, something that exists today and might not be so easy to overcome. Then, we're going to pass you off to the ever-hopeful John Nasta.
So, our first story brings us to Redwood City, California, in beautiful Silicon Valley, to the headquarters of a company called Suki.
You might know Suki as Robin AI or Learning Motors. That's what it used to be called.
So, Suki is a startup that sells a voice assistant for healthcare providers. These two tech guys founded Suki sometime last year, and they brought a lot of experience from a lot of impressive companies, Google, Oracle, Salesforce, just to name a few.
They go and recruit a bunch of other really smart, forward-thinking people, and they begin building what the industry eventually comes to call Alexa for Doctors.
And they call this Alexa for Doctors? Drum roll, please. Suki.
This past May, news breaks that the company has raised $20 million from some really big-name investors.
But the story is actually bigger than that. After just a year in development, the AI-powered Suki voice assistant is going live.
Now, this thing is already in clinics. Suki is holding 12 pilots in a bunch of medical specialty practices in two states.
So doctors are using it every day, and they're using it across three separate EHR systems. Again, you know this, electronic health records.
Suki is basically like a smart scribe. It's jotting down medical notes and integrating them within these EHRs.
And the more doctors use Suki, the more the tech actually improves.
So by the time the pilot ends, the company says its voice assistant can decrease doctors' time spent on documentation by a whopping 60%. That's a lot of time.
So Suki goes live, and by this fall, it is handling something like 1,000 patient encounters per week.
And now, Suki says that it causes a 70% reduction in EHR time. That's an additional 10 percentage points.
It's huge. But we should note that Suki has not released any of this data. There is no way for us to verify these very big, very intriguing, very eyebrow-raising claims. Because, hey, we should be skeptical, especially when the results are that good.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about that. But let's just say that Suki's data are legit, or that its tech is achieving even half of what it claims.
It's a big deal. Why?
Because, as you know, doctors are strapped for time. They're super frustrated.
And EHR requirements get a lot of the blame here. Critics say that documentation rules rip doctors away from patients, and studies show that they add hours of extra work per week or even per day, and that time is all in front of the computer screen, not the patient.
We're also seeing research that ties documentation requirements to physician burnout, and burnout is more of a problem in medicine than just about any other profession. It leads to clinical mistakes, it risks patient safety, and could even contribute to physician suicide.
Which is another major problem.
And we're not saying voice assistants are the panacea that healthcare needs.
But research has suggested that real-life, breathing human scribes can help physicians' mental health and productivity quite a bit.
So it follows then, why couldn't a digital voice assistant do the same thing, but more sustainably and perhaps more effectively too?
And now, the bad news.
Before we get into this really quick story, let's be clear. Amazon's Alexa is not HIPAA compliant. It does not handle protected health information.
Not yet, at least, because there is plenty of talk about that being the future.
But we're bringing you this disclaimer because although this story is seriously horrifying, it is not a healthcare story, and you shouldn't consider it to be a healthcare story.
So let's go back to earlier this year when a very shocking story comes out in the press. Here's the deal. Amazon's Echo reportedly records a private conversation inside a home and sends it to a random person in some guy's contact list.
So the incident allegedly goes down something like this. There's a couple in Portland, Oregon. They love their Alexa and they wire their home with all this Amazon tech.
Then one day they get a phone call. It's from one of the husband's employees who is based in Seattle.
The employee says, "Hey, you need to turn off your Alexa like right now."
Huh?
He goes on. He says, "You are being hacked."
Then the employee drops a bomb. He's receiving audio files of conversations that are going on inside the house. Now, the couple has a pretty hard time believing this.
So the employee says, "Nah, listen, it's true. I just heard you two talking about your hardwood floors."
And their jaws drop because they were, in fact, talking about hardwood floors. Alexa really had recorded them and sent the files to some random guy, all without their consent.
So the couple is understandably really upset, and they reach out to Amazon.
Amazon confirms what has happened, and the company is actually pretty confused at first.
And then the company digs into it a little further and determines that the snafu occurred due to a series of mistakenly interpreted voice commands.
So it's something like this. Alexa improperly wakes up because of a background conversation, then it hears another request that it thinks means send message, so Alexa says, "Hey, who am I going to send this message to?" And then the background noise kicks in again, and Alexa somehow hears the employee's name.
So yeah, it's kind of like this freak accident, a series of unfortunate events that led to a pretty alarming situation.
And that's disturbing enough for consumer technology, you know, for the gadgets that we bring into our homes.
But imagining this kind of error taking place inside the clinic, with this really sensitive data just bouncing around in the room, well, that's just a nightmare.
John Nasta, thank you so much for joining us here on Databook today.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
So you're in town at MJH Studios in Cranberry, New Jersey for something totally different, and you were generous enough to give us some time.
No, you dragged me by my tie into the studio to talk about stuff that I love to talk about. So it's a pleasure to be here.
So what we're going to do is we're kind of going to get off the news cycle a little bit and kind of give you some free reign, which I know is something you love.
Okay.
What I want to know, first and foremost, is what do you think is the biggest innovation that is reshaping the clinic right now?
I don't think it's fair to pick one, because I think that the convergence of data, you know, I talk about big data all the time, the convergence of AI and those things. But what that one little sort of glimmer in the distance, it's really catching my eye and my imagination, is voice. Think about voice. Alexa, Siri, it's everywhere. And as we move from punching computer cards to keyboards, to a GUI interface, to touch, voice is the next conduit through which we will connect to technology. So I think that's going to be a very, very important aspect of the technological world we live in. And as usual, we're seeing the consumer side lead. So we're seeing Siri and Alexa and all these things really leading with voice. So for me, the utility of voice in clinical medicine is going to be really interesting, because it's not only something linguistic. It's not just recording the history and physical that a clinician would do with a patient, but it's actually scrubbing that dialogue for interesting insights. For example, I was at my orthopedic surgeon 6 months ago, and I spoke about my knee and used the word pain 4 times. At this visit, I used the word pain 10 times. That kind of thing might fall beneath the radar, but the linguistic analysis itself might add to what is fundamentally one of the most important aspects of the physical exam, and that's the history. How do you feel? Why are you here? What's bothering you? Where does it hurt? Now, so that's step one. That's a linguistic analysis of what's going on, and that's pretty cool. That's important. But we know that voice can actually be a biomarker. Think about voice as a biomarker. In other words, the articulation of sound, the movement of air out of our mouths can show abnormalities that could suggest Parkinson's disease, dementia, even things like coronary artery disease. And these are studies that are going on now. So it leads me to the suggestion that voice might actually emerge as a vital sign. So it's not only just in the office where a physician is listening to me, and that information now is as powerful as an EKG or as powerful as a blood pressure cuff, but also extrapolating that dynamic to things where we have care at a distance. So now when I speak to a clinician, a nurse, a doctor on the phone using telemedicine, my voice acts as a conduit through which certain aspects of my wellness disease now flow.
So when we look at voice, obviously over the past couple of years, consumer adoption rates have been going up. Still probably not, especially for Siri, still probably not where the companies want them to be. What are the challenges, you know, of this entering the clinic? What is going to be the barrier to this? And are we going to be able to overcome it?
Well, you know, I think fundamentally in the consumer arena is having an open mic in your house is distressing. Mm-hmm. So Siri's always listening. You know, Alexa always is listening to what I'm doing, what I'm talking about. So I think that's intrinsically problematic, and we're going to have to address that. However, I think that from a clinical perspective, we're seeing things like scribes enter practice now, where the scribe will come and write down things.
Seems like very 1800s.
Do they bring in a clay tablet and chip in cuneiform? Yeah, I think it is. And it's our job to look at some degree of clinical validation. So I think we're going to see functional changes where we record the history, and that gets part of the electronic medical record. It's going to be immortalized, which is important in of itself, because when clinicians take notes, they often hear what they want to hear. And that I think is a bit of a problem. They're looking for the word, pain. Cough, sleep, bathroom. And when they hear it, they're triggered into almost a predisposed recognition to something that they're already looking for. When we find that sometimes symptomatology is hiding in plain sight, And that's the power of technology to reveal that. So our challenge will be, number one, to have this technology used as a fact keeper, fact checker. But then we have to really build in the clinical validation that this actually works. So I can actually find out if my patient who comes to me for sleeplessness, I can't sleep, doc, I don't feel good, I think I've got the flu, when in fact, voice tells me that that person is depressed. So it takes us down a completely different pathway. So the challenge is acceptance and a little bit of clinical validation, because I think people are skeptical. It's a little Star Trek-y. Mm-hmm. And there lies the magic of the tool.
Yeah, it kind of gets at almost a bigger issue in this space, right? Where you have the innovations that are rooted a lot in speculation, and those that are kind of cut and dry have been maybe bubbling up for a while now and are no longer as exciting because they're not as Star Trek-y.
Well, you know, I think that as clinicians, generally we want the same but better. You know, we want a new cephalosporin with an extended spectrum, or a cephalosporin that has a better resistance pattern against certain pathogens, right? We want the same but better. And I think when we see voice, it's not quite the same. It's a different modality. I'm now going to record your voice, and I'm going to put it into a computer, and I'm going to process it to find out clinical insights. So, you know, on one hand, it's new and it's different. On the other hand, it is the oldest clinical tool known to man. It's the ability to talk, whether it be the talking cure. Think about that. Think about psychiatry and psychology. You know, maybe the most important person we should be talking to is the computer. And boy, that is disruptive intrinsically.
Well, that's something that you say a lot about a lot of different aspects of medicine, and it angers a lot of people. Uh-huh. And to some extent, you know, their argument is that medicine is inherently human. You need the human touch, that these technologies, no matter how advanced they are, cannot be replaced. What do you say?
Now, you know where I'm going to go with that, right?
Yeah, I know where you're going to go.
I think the promise of technology is to give clinicians more time with their patients, to actually provide the basis for a human connection. And, you know, if an alien came to the world today and went into an exam room and watched a clinical exam, they would think that the computer is the patient, because the doctor spends most of the time looking at the computer and not really engaging with the patient. So I think technology is going to change that game by making aspects of diagnosis that much more streamlined through technology. Now, you know, yes, I think that ultimately when my wife comes home from the pediatrician, my first question will not be, what did the doctor say? It might be, what did the computer say? But we're seeing that in every aspect of life. When I get into my car, I you know, tell Waze to get me home, you know? So I think it's a complex, really, constellation of issues, but the emergence of technology will change the notion of how we practice medicine. And it may ultimately come about where AI, artificial intelligence, is actually IA. It's the letters backwards. It's intelligence augmented. And just think how wonderful it would be if a physician could have that augmented dialogue scrubbed by a computer. Think about if a physician could have clinical trials come up as a possible option based upon the existing electronic data. I think it's a wonderful world. And you know, technology is scary, but change is scary. And probably to complicate that, the rate of change is even scarier. You know, Harvard Business School did a study of executives, and they asked them what they fear most. And they said, we fear the rate of change. Yet, that fear of the rate of change is also, paradoxically, the lexicon of change we tell people now. For example, fail fast. That's the new mantra in corporate America. Yet the C-suite is cowering in fear, saying, oh, don't change fast. So how do you even make sense of that? So I think that's a real kind of conflicting dynamic, even with physicians. And ultimately, we need to have the same but better. And in today's technological world, that's changing completely.
So say you are a CEO of a health system or somebody who is in the C-suite and is thus responsible for driving these types of changes in a health system. What's the right approach? Is it to take the way you're saying and just run with it? Is it to consider more of what the physicians are saying? Is there some type of middle ground? How can somebody who is operating today in 2018 take all these thoughts and turn them into some type of actionable path forward?
Well, interestingly, you refer to the C-suite as sort of the driver of change. And that's often the case, right? The mandate comes from above that we want to implement innovation. We need to be more innovative. Well, number one, that in of itself is very abstract, because where do we innovate? You know, we have to find the spot of innovation. That's number one. Number two for me is that culture squashes innovation. It's the rank and file. If we're in a hospital setting, it's the physicians. It's the nurses. It's the technicians that have to embrace technology. And I find that while it may be demanded from above or commanded from above, it's culture that has to assimilate that change. Now, conversely, when I speak to audiences, you know, pharmaceutical executives, clinicians, a variety of people, I'll often ask them, how many people here have had a telemedicine visit? And usually it's about 5%.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's even that much.
So, I mean, come on. Here we sit around and pontificate about the value of technology. And really, telemedicine isn't even an innovation. You know what it is? It's an implementation. It's the same I word. The technology exists today. Mm-hmm. It's like Uber. I mean, Uber was functionally nothing new. It was the creation of existing technologies together to create a new process. So it was the implementation that led rise to the innovation. So to me, I think you have to somehow instill in the rank and file, in the employees, the nature of innovation, the nature of the changing world, the aspects of the human inflection point where things are changing dramatically and quickly. And then that will allow change to kind of take hold. Otherwise, you're dealing with basically, you know, an army of obstructionists.
So, John, this is coming out right around Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. What are you thankful for in health tech?
Wow. I'm thankful. I'm thankful for my family, you know, that support me and nurture me and make me do the things I do. But I think I am thankful to be alive at this point in human history. I mean, there was the Gutenberg moment. There was the Industrial Revolution. There were a variety of inflection points. But this one is the mother of all inflection points. And for us to be able to live over the next 50, 100 years is absolutely extraordinary. That what will come in the next 100 years will tear at the fabric of humanity. It will, as Ray Kurzweil say, be equal to the technological achievements of the last 20,000 years. It all changes now. And to be able to participate in it, to watch it, and to benefit from it is extraordinary.
John Nosta, Health Tech KOL, you are a member of our ad board, which we thank you for. Mm-hmm. And you are just an all-around important player to the scene.
So thanks.
Thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
So before we let you go today, we just want to remind you to rate and subscribe and review Databook if you like it. And hey, also feel free to tell a friend.
Yeah, and don't forget about this great Thanksgiving debate that's going on here in our studio.
Thanksgiving is over, Tom. No one cares.
Listen, we got to figure this out because we're still eating leftovers. If you had to give one up, and we have to decide by next year, is it cranberry sauce or is it stuffing?
If you have feelings on this, you could reach out to @HCANews, Twitter, whatever, because we are a healthcare analytics news podcast, and we want you to come join us in the rest of our universe. Expand your mind from the Databook world.
That's right. So you can find us on hcanews.com. Check out this podcast again. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, I'm Tom Castles.
I'm Jack Murtha, and this is Databook.